Subscribe to The Spectator this summer and get the next 10 weeks of the magazine, as well as unlimited access to our website and app for just £10. Not only that, we'll send you a bottle of PIMS absolutely free, only while stocks last. So go to www.spectator.co.uk/PIMS to claim this offer now.
Hello and welcome to the Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So on Tuesday night, Joe Biden signaled a shifting American foreign policy. Here's what he had to say.
The world is changing. We're engaged in a serious competition with China. We're dealing with the challenges on multiple fronts with Russia. We're confronted with cyber attacks and nuclear proliferation. We have to shore up America's competitiveness to meet these new challenges in the competition for the 21st century. We can do both, fight terrorism and take on new threats that are here now and will continue to be here in the future. And there's nothing China or Russia would rather have, would want more in this competition than the United States to be bogged down another decade in Afghanistan.
Where does this leave the UK with its own defense strategy? James, tell us first about the American position. What is it at the moment?
So I thought the Biden speech was interesting for two reasons. One, he is essentially saying that when it comes to dealing with terrorism, the US is going back to its pre-9/11 position, which we all remember, you know, rumoured terrorist training camp here or rumoured terrorist manufacturing facility there. The US hits it with cruise missiles. And when Biden was saying that, you know, over the horizon capabilities, very few, if any, boots on the ground, that is essentially what he is signalling a return to. Now, I think that has big implications for the UK in that if the UK wishes to prevent ungoverned spaces where terrorists are can operate from in either Africa or the Middle East, then the UK is going to have to find another partner if it wants to go in and close down those ungoverned spaces. Now, the obvious candidate for that is France, and the UK and the French militaries have worked well together. But you consider the dire state of Anglo-French political relations, I don't really think that's a realistic runner until you can get to a healthier, broader Anglo-French relationship. This security relationship cannot exist in total isolation from the broader political tensions. And then I thought the other interesting thing about the speech, which has big implications, I think, for the UK, was Biden was essentially saying, I'm getting out of Afghanistan because I regard it as a distraction from this great power competition with China and Russia. You know, he says we're now in a serious competition with China. That obviously has implications for the UK. Now, the UK thinks that no other country in Europe has adapted as quickly to this US shift in position as the UK has. I still think, though, there are ways in which the whole of government hasn't got this. This is not a kind of dreadnought race in terms of, you know, who's going to build the most ships. I mean, it's more complex than that. It's about the full spectrum technology and the like. You look at the fact that the Newport Waferfy microchip deal, that's now been bought by a Chinese-controlled company. Now, look, there is a review by Stephen Lovegrove, the Prime Minister's National Security Advisor, into the sale, and it can be reversed. The fact that when the sale has gone through in the first place suggests that the whole of government yet hasn't grasped this. So, I mean, there are two big implications here for the UK. One, if the UK wants to shut down ungoverned spaces in the neighbourhood, who is it going to do that with, given that the Americans, this is obviously not what they're interested in doing anymore? And secondly, working out this shift on China.
Now, Katie, as listeners to this podcast know, you interviewed the Defence Secretary, Ben Wallace, this week for The Spectator. And this is something that he mentioned as well, this idea of ungoverned spaces, failing states. And so he does want to do more on it.
I think going back to James' point about how the UK has adapted more quickly than other countries in Europe when it comes to this American tilt, I think what I find quite interesting about what Ben Wallace was saying was he said, if America makes the decision that it needs to tilt more, and here he was, I think, referring to the Pacific and China, the question for the West, for Europe, for the United Kingdom and for other nations is, are we going to go with them? Do we backfill or do we do both? And I think that leans into this sense, which is no one is really suggesting the UK is of similar size to the US or even these other big superpowers. But there is a question as to the fact, can the UK be very tactical, which I think lots of ministers think it tends to be, in terms of how it applies these things to still have a big impact and a meaningful impact when it comes to how it exerts itself on defence? I think that it was clear from the interview with Ben Wallace that he still believes there is a place for intervention when it was suggested to him that you could look at Afghanistan and perhaps draw the conclusion that the West is more relaxed about failed states. He was quite quick to hit back on that and suggest that it's not a position you want to be in where you have failed states that are obviously a dangerous thing to have. And therefore, I think it's more about working out how the UK can achieve the policy aim that it wants in terms of some intervention, while obviously coming to terms with the fact that it's hard to do that on a mass scale alone. And also there's not like a huge appetite in the Tory party or in government for high effort intervention. But I think you can see from some of Ben's comments on things like what the UK can do in parts of Africa, that it's still an aspect of the strategy.
I also think that there are big questions about whether any Western democracy has the patience to do this. Look at the pullback from the Sahel that Macron has announced. Macron loathes this idea that this is France's Afghanistan, but you know, the fact that the French are planning to reduce their presence there quite considerably. I just wonder whether in a democratic system these long-term commitments are possible. Now, some people say, oh, look, South Korea, Germany, you park troops there as a deterrent, and that has worked. I think the difference is that in South Korea and West Germany, now Germany, they are obviously supporting governments that are there on the ground. So they are not having to do the fighting. They're not at risk. They're obviously at risk if there's conflict, but they're not in day-to-day existence on their bases. They're not. And so I think what the question becomes kind of, what do you do? And I think these long-term commitments in places, you know, Ben Wallace talked in his interview with Casey about, you know, going into Africa to prevent these states from failing. You need a UK military presence. The question I think is, I think a kind of Sierra Leone style, relatively short presence, that I think publics, parliament wears. I think what is more difficult is when you start saying, well, we're going to be there for a generation. Mm. I think that is much more, in the current constraints of domestic politics, much more difficult. I also think there is other question here, which the Wallace interview raises, which is, you look at the number of security challenges which are now racking up. You've got this kind of full spectrum competition with China. You've got this cyber warfare competition with Russia, essentially, you know, very good spectator cover on that recently. And you've got the continuing challenges that are posed by failed states and the fact that the US has clearly chosen to deprioritise this as a concern. And to go back to the language Ben Wallace was using, you know, does that require the UK to backfill? These are interesting questions. You've had a big increase in defence spending, the biggest increase in defence spending since the end of the Cold War. But it is hard not to think that that's only the first of many. And the problem is, essentially, all Western European democracies spent the Cold War peace dividend on healthcare, social care. And so what are you going to do now? What are you going to stop doing to do this? Or is the public sufficiently supportive of a role on the world stage that you can go and say, look, we've got to raise taxes to spend more on defence?
And Katie, on the American aspect of this, would it be fair to say that Afghanistan and what's happened in the last month has caused the soul-searching within Whitehall about our relationship with America, especially on partnerships like these? Are politicians in Whitehall now feeling a bit better about the American alliance than they were before? Because there were definitely a few fraught moments.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the whole of Europe and the relationship with Joe Biden, his administration, the withdrawal from Afghanistan has exacerbated tensions. We've seen these anonymous quotes. I think you had anonymous briefings effectively saying Joe Biden had gone a bit loopy. And
that Boris just caused him Sleepy Joe, which is troublesome for him.
Yeah, exactly. And like, therefore it did lead to a bit of a war of words. I think we've definitely seen an effort by the UK side to dial that down in recent days. And you can see also in Dominic Raab's appearance at the Select Committee that he was at pains to say America is still the most important ally on these things. It's still the most important relationship. So I think there was an edge and people are walking back from the edge, but it was natural that it was going to expose it to a degree, just because the scenes in Afghanistan were so appalling and everything moved so fast that there was going to be a blame game. I think the question now is, how does the UK work with America and influence America still? Because I think one of the things, when you look back to the recall of Parliament, when you had that debate and ultimately the biggest criticisms were coming from Johnson's own MPs. I think that the fact that Boris Johnson had barely spoken to Joe Biden before, not even been consulted particularly, has been a bit of a wake-up call in terms of what is the special relationship. Now we hear that Boris Johnson doesn't like the term special relationship because it's needy. But I think the lack of contact, because there was lots before Joe Biden came in about whether Boris Johnson would not get on with him on a personal level. I don't think this is so much down to a personal relationship. We can see from the fact that there was so little consultation from America generally with countries in Europe that I think it's more a general shift in their approach than anything about Boris Johnson said this on Brexit and now Joe Biden won't speak to him. But it does just highlight the changing of positions. And I think the challenge now for the UK side and what they're trying to work out is obviously how can they influence America to still take on that role on the global stage? And is it possible to do that? Because there's clearly lots of areas where they still want to collaborate, but America is changing vastly in the sense it cannot be relied on. And I think Ben Wallace in the interview also points out to the fact that in the past, countries have been a bit complacent about the role that America is going to play, and that is not something they're going to be able to do any longer.
James, is there a bit of an awkward shift back to Europe post-Brexit? Because before Brexit happened, we were talking about the American trade deal and all of that, getting closer to America on that side, and certainly people in this government were quite keen to do something like that. But are we now actually thinking on defence, on some other goals, Europe might actually be a bit more of a natural ally than we thought before?
So I think there are two separate points here. I think in terms of neighbourhood security, the Americans have been, since frankly, since the fall of the Cold War, becoming progressively less interested in Europe. That has been going on under successive presidents. From 1945 to 1989, the big threat to America sat across the European continent. Right now, America thinks the big threat to it is coming from China. So that obviously makes Europe less strategically relevant to the US than it was before. Joe Biden is a Russia hawk. I think you will see a continuing interest in Russia, particularly because he is president and also because of cyber activities. In cyberspace, the Russia have an undoubted nuisance factor. Look at the colonial gas pipeline, you look at those food shortages in the US, but the US can't afford not to pay attention. But I still think that China is viewed in Washington as a much more serious long-term threat. Russia is more an irritant, and how do you get it to behave itself? China is seen as the threat to the American-led world order. There is a big question here about where Europe is going to go. I think the UK would very much like NATO to shift to looking more at China. Others are more sceptical of that. There are some in Europe who take a kind of view of, well, look, the Americans think this, but we don't want to kind of immediately fall into line between American policy on China. We want strategic autonomy. And I think you see this constant humming and hawing, which is that a Chinese-led world order will be less comfortable for Europe than an American-led world order. But the kind of European view is, why do we want to put all our eggs in the American basket? I think the UK view essentially will be that if you look at, partly not just because of America, but because of our closest allies, you look around at that G7, D10 meeting down in Cornwall, you look at the people who want to take the most hawkish positions. They are Australia, Canada, the US. They are the countries the UK is closest to in that grouping. This was always going to be the case long before Brexit in terms of neighbourhood security, in terms of terrorist threat coming from Africa, and energy, the shift away from oil is making the Middle East less relevant to the US. All of that, the UK is going to have to find more partners in Europe. But the UK and France, yes, German defence spending is increasing, but for obvious historical reasons, they are not going to be comfortable as a kind of military power. I mean, there is a big question about, how do you organise European neighbourhood security policy.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And thank you for listening to this episode of Coffee House Shots. Do join us again next week.